My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Is this world we share, Gaia, a living being? Furthermore, is the universe a sentient being, and are we unified with the collective consciousness of this and all that is? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Dr. Jude Currivan, says that we are evolving into this understanding and that everything in existence has inherent meaning and evolutionary purpose. Dr. Currivan is a cosmologist, futurist, planetary healer, member of the Evolutionary Leaders Circle, and formerly one of the most senior businesswomen in the United Kingdom. She's the author of 7 books, including the 2017 Nautilus Award-winning The Cosmic Hologram. Her website is wholeworld-view.org, and she joins me this week to share her path of discovery and latest book, The Story of Gaia, The Big Breath, and the evolutionary journey of our conscious planet. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Dr. Jude Currivan. Welcome, Jude.
Victor, it's absolutely lovely to be with you. Thank you for the invite.
And thank you for joining us and sharing your experience and wisdom and all of the wonderful work that you bring to our world. So as I shared in the introduction, you are a cosmologist, a futurist, a planetary healer, a member of the Evolutionary Leaders Circle, and previously one of the most senior businesswomen in the United Kingdom. Please tell us about your early path and how it led to all of these wonderful pursuits.
Well, I often say, Victor, it's been a scenic route. And one philosopher, Kierkegaard, once said, we live life forwards and understand it backwards. And it's really only when I look back on my life and this amazing journey that I've been so joyously privileged to tread that I see how so many of the paths that I was treading now are in very much convergence. So very early on, I was born in the Midlands of the United Kingdom in England, which is an industrial area. My dad was a coal miner. My granddad was a coal miner. My mum was a homemaker until my dad passed away when I was 10 and my brother was nearly 8. And then she worked as a secretary going forward. But, you know, so it was a challenging upbringing in a number of ways. But the one thing that I will always be grateful for and adore my mum and my dad and my brother was the love. My mum was one of those incredible mothers that just gave both her children her unconditionally loving support. And that carried on, you know, whatever we chose to do in life, she would support our choices. But for me, this sort of journey that I guess we're sharing stories about today really began when I started to have what I call supernormal experiences when I was about 4 years old. And so we might call those telepathic, remote viewing, many others. But a large part of that involved my engaging with and communicating with what we might call discarnate realms or multidimensional realms of reality. So that started me off on a lifelong journey of curiosity. And we could talk more about where that journey took, I guess. But that's really how my curiosity was piqued from such an early age. And I've been following that sort of the breadcrumbs of that curious path ever since.
I must share with you that in my early life, when I was 4 and 5 years old, I had similar experiences. And when I would share them with my parents, I was told that I had an overactive imagination. And by my father, mostly. My mother was a little more understanding, having, I think, a sense of what was going on also. But what would you say to parents of children who are emoting these things and sharing unusual things for their age, for example? What would you share with parents? What should they do?
Well, two things, I think, just to go back to my own circumstances. I never did share those experiences with my parents or anyone else until I was well into adulthood. And to be honest, it wasn't that I wasn't conscious of not sharing them out of any fear of ridicule or being told the sort of things that you were told. It may seem very odd, but it never occurred to me. And I was having such a lot of fun. And so I never was in that situation. And I'm really very grateful because I know my mum would, like your mum probably would, have been understanding and open. I suspect, you know, the rest of my community were unlikely to be. So for whatever reason, I never did share. But I think times are changing. And, you know, we now know, studies have shown that certainly in America, around half of Americans have had such experiences. So there's a huge number of folks out there who are probably parents themselves now who have had those experiences as children and perhaps were told they had overactive imaginations. I would just say that the latest leading edge science that I write about, which converges with universal spiritual traditions, is showing us that those aren't the, you know, in some cases they may be, but these phenomena are natural. They're part of an emerging cosmology of a living and conscious and evolving universe that exists and evolves as a unified entity. So these multidimensional intelligences, the ability for us to engage and communicate with them, are natural parts of who we are. So I would hope and certainly invite any parents to listen to their children. You know, a number of children, many, many children, especially very young ones, have relayed quite naturally stories about other lives. And, you know, when those stories have been checked by researchers, they've actually been found to correlate with lived lives. So the world is much grander, much more amazing than perhaps most of us have been taught it is. And so I just invite parents to be kind and open to their children. And as long as the communications appear benevolent, and mine certainly always have been, and I'd love to hear yours, then I would hope parents would offer a kindness and an openness and just listen to their children.
Listen, that's the magic word. Listen to your children, and you'll learn when you listen to your children. Thank you so much for sharing that. You went on to get a master's degree in physics and a doctorate in archaeology. Did those pursuits set the course for what you did for the rest of your life?
Yes and no. I mean, I did the master's degree when I was in my late teens at Oxford University, you know, the usual age that young people go to university. And I specialized in quantum physics and cosmology because I wanted to understand why the experiences that I'd had since I was 4 years old, how they were explained by science and at the time leading edge science. And the reality was they weren't. The leading edge science at the time that I was taught at Oxford, again, was very materialistic and really, despite the subject matter, was more mechanistic and certainly didn't even go part way to helping me, you know, have a deeper sense and a how-to bridge from my experiences to this physical realm. Where I did find that wisdom was in ancient wisdom, the teachings of ancient India and other traditions. And then I actually, because I felt that a career in academia was not going to be my way forward because it was clearly, you know, not aligned with what I was experiencing and wasn't giving me any further answers and didn't whet my curiosity in that regard, I continued to research leading edge science, but I went into corporate life. And it was only when I left corporate life in the mid-90s that I'd always had this urge, because of my fascination and respect for ancient traditions and ancient wisdom, that I actually undertook a PhD in archaeology. at the University of Reading in the UK, and my research was on this this move from being hunter-gatherers to being farmers and pastoralists that in the UK happened around 5,000 years ago. So my research was in the Neolithic and how, when that happened, our views on who we were, how we related to the natural world and the wider cosmos changed. Because when we change our culture, we naturally, our worldviews change and vice versa. So that's why I went on that. Those were three aspects of my scenic route to now.
You've authored 7 books, including your 2017 Nautilus Award-winning book, The Cosmic Hologram, In Formation at the Center of Creation. We're going to talk about your latest book, The Story of Gaia, in a minute or so. Let's talk about The Cosmic Hologram. In that book, you share that holographic patterns of information underlie our physical reality. Please explain.
It's probably longer than we have in detail. Essentially, what we're finding at all scales of existence and across many different fields of research now is that the appearance of our universe, its energy and matter and space and time, aren't its fundamental reality. That appearance of our universe emerges from deeper non-physical realms of causation. And it does so as meaningful in formation. The other thing that needs to be put into the pot, as it were, is that the study of black holes has led us to understand that our entire universe is essentially a cosmic hologram. And that now is being shared in very recent books by mainstream scientists such as Professor Brian Cox and Professor Jeff Forshaw, who've just written a book on black holes that are saying, or at least coming to the same conclusion that I write about in The Cosmic Hologram, that the reality of our universe arises from deeper levels of causation and is holographically manifested. So I'm sure we can delve a bit more deeply into that if you'd like us to. But what it is showing, and this is fundamental, is that mind and consciousness aren't thus something we have, but literally what we and the whole world are, because cosmic mind, cosmic consciousness articulates, expresses itself in the meaningful information that is the all-pervasive stuff of reality, of our universe's reality, and meaningfully is innately relational. So our universe does exist and evolve as a unified entity. And it's that unity that enables all the experiences that you had, that I have, that you know, all of us naturally can have, because we too are part of its innate wholeness.
In the title, you hyphenate In Formation. Why?
Because, you know, if I didn't hyphenate it, and some folks have said, I'm obsessed with hyphenation, but there is a reason for it. Without the hyphen, information could be deemed to be random data, gobbledygook. And yet when we look at all of this research, as I say, from many, many different researchers across many fields of study and all scales of existence, we find that our cosmic mind articulates the reality of our universe informationally. And it does so in the form of a universal alphabet of just 2 letters, the ones and zeros of digitized information. But it does so meaningfully. In other words, the pixelation of that reality is absolutely minute, as small as to an atom, as an atom is to the entire universe. And yet from those letters that of themselves don't have meaning, the combination is actually meaningful in that it is expressed as atoms, molecules, planets, plants, people. So everything from the very, very minute pixelation upwards is the relational patterns of digitized information that, when they come together in those patterns, imbue meaning, because they imbue the meaningful information that is our universe's reality, literally informing all the forms of energy matter. And within the ongoing evolutionary arc of our universe's story through space and time.
Is this something that you think indigenous peoples, shamans from ancient times, had an understanding of and that we've sort of forgotten?
In different traditions, I think there were different ways and emphasis on making sense, you know, making meaning and sense and purpose of our human role in the world. And the ways of the shamans, and I've been very, very privileged to work with many indigenous wisdom keepers, is realizing that we are innately part of the web of life that is the world, the whole world, both on a planetary level and on a cosmic level. And that is more experiential and it's more so heart-based. But there are a number of ancient traditions that actually have trod the sort of the emphasis, the path of awareness that is mind-based, such as the ancient sages of India, the rishis, as they're known as, of ancient Vedic India, wrote of this understanding. They wrote of, you know, realizing that mind and consciousness aren't what we have. They're literally what the whole world are. They wrote of something called Indra's net, where they saw the wholeness of creation in, you know, as multifaceted gems, beautiful jewels, with every facet reflecting every other facet of every other jewel and connected by golden threads. And that description is very close to what I write about in the Cosmic Hologram. And in fact, I refer to Indra's net. And the other way in which those particular sages talked about our universe being the out-breath of Brahman, the great breath of Brahman. And I refer back to that perception, both in the Cosmic Hologram and the story of Gaia, because our universe did not begin in the apparent chaos of a big bang. It wasn't big, we know that, but it wasn't a bang, it wasn't chaotic. It was far more ordered, exquisitely fine-tuned, and far more like the beginning of an ongoing big breath as an out-breath of Brahman. So these ancient traditions in their own ways saw very deeply, profoundly into the nature of reality that, yes, leading-edge science now is taking us forward, but it's also incorporating that wisdom. And I hope, therefore, respecting and honouring it to a far greater degree than's generally been the case with the scientific approach over the last few hundred years.
I've been blessed to interview several scientists recently who are now seeing that materialist science fall short, and I think that's going to happen.
I agree. I mean, I'm an advisor for a whole group of scientists called the Galileo Commission, who came together to write a report on the latest evidence that shows this moves beyond a materialist cosmology. And that's, of course, what I write about in both the Cosmic Hologram and the story of Gaia. And more and more and more scientists are coming to this perception now, which, of course, turns everything that we've been taught in terms of materialism and separation and consciousness being somehow an accidental, outcomings of random evolution over billions of years. That whole story now has been completely turned on its head.
What inspired your latest book, The Story of Gaia?
My love for our planetary home, Gaia, as, you know, in my experience and as the evidence is more and more compellingly showing, that, you know, our planetary home Gaia is a sentient, evolving being within a sentient and evolving universe. And many years ago, I was actually guided that I would at some point, and it was almost like it was an implication that when the evidence was available and people were ready to hear this new understanding, that I would write a trilogy of books. The first would be an understanding of this emergent cosmology, and that's the Cosmic Hologram. The second would be the more experiential but nonetheless science-based story of Gaia, and that has just been published. And then there would be a third book that would be about us, where we've come from, but more importantly, perhaps our choices now and how we could consciously evolve to literally wake up from this illusion of separation and take our evolutionary invitation, as it were, to become co-evolutionary partners with Gaia and our entire universe.
I don't know if you're a fan of the Moody Blues. I've been a fan of the Moody Blues since I first heard their first recording back in the 1960s. But there's a song that they put out called The Eyes of a Child. And the lyric says in part, "With the eyes of a child, you must come out and see that your world's spinning round, and through life you will be a small part of a whole of a love that exists. With the eyes of a child, you will see." I think we all have to go back and remember what it is to see the world through the eyes of a child.
Indeed. And, you know, I don't think I've ever grown up, so I still see the world with the eyes of a child.
I think you and I are brother and sister. I really do, based on what you're sharing and just the experiences that we've had and the way that and our perspective of everything. My guest is Dr. Jude Kurovan. Her book is called The Story of Gaia, The Big Breath, and the Evolutionary Journey of Our Conscious Planet. Jude, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your wonderful work.
Thank you, Victor. Well, people can buy the book on Amazon or through any good bookstores or through my publisher, Inner Traditions. It's already out in the US and Canada from the 1st of November, and it's on pre-order now in the UK and Europe for the 8th of December launch. So absolutely can get it now or pre-order it for a Christmas present. And also, when the Cosmic Hologram was published, I co-founded I don't call it an organization, I call it an organism called Whole World View. And we have a website, www.whole-world-view.org. And there's many, many resources on all, you know, that we're exploring and sharing from many different voices, lots of YouTube videos. And it's a beautiful site, and we invite folks, if they're interested, they can sign up for our free newsletter and get to hear more and more about this whole emergent understanding of unity in diversity and literally a whole world view.
And we'll be back with more of Dr. Jude Kurovan and her book, The Story of Gaia, after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Dr. Jude Kurovan, her new book, The Story of Gaia, The Big Breath, and the Evolutionary Journey of Our Conscious Planet. Jude, each chapter not only begins with a chapter number, but a numerical ga or ma reference. What do these represent?
Well, each chapter is really the story of our entire universe from its very beginning, 13.8 billion years ago. So I write about how our stories don't begin with us. They go back as far as we have a memory of. And of course, now with science and our abilities to see further out into space and further back in time, we can take our story And Gaia's story, right back to the beginning of our universe, in that first moment of an ongoing big breath. So I like to sort of tell, you know, through the book, our origins and ancestors. And then eventually, after 9 billion years of journeying, we come to our planetary system, our solar system. And we talk about our family, our planetary family, and Gaia's parents, and on and on. And at the beginning of each chapter, it just felt right, because I was feeling that the book was writing through me, that I wanted to sort of help it feel an even more experiential sense for readers. So I begin each chapter with an attunement or a story from my travels or a practice, just to invite folks into that journey, perhaps at a deeper, more experiential level than they would normally do as readers of a book.
And the Ga and Ma references?
The Ga and Ma. Oh, the Ga and Ma. Right. Ga is billion years ago, right? And Ma is millions of years ago. So it's just a shortened version of this deep time that we're talking about, because our universe began 13 billion years ago, or 13 Ga years ago. And our planetary home Gaia really began her journey 4.5 billion years ago, or GA years ago. As a scientist, sometimes you find that there are shortened versions of words. And if you're not a scientist, you go, what is that? But that's what those are. And it's just the timeline, because when you read the book, you know, I certainly was in awe just of this incredible evolutionary journey. And its purposefulness, as well as its meaningfulness, you know, meaningfully informed and holographically manifested, this sense of an evolutionary impulse from simplicity to complexity and ever greater levels of, you know, individuation and individual self-awareness and interdependence and interbeing. And so when you see these deep, deep time sort of milestones of that journey, I was in awe of Gaia before I wrote the book. I was in awe of our universe. But that deepened into a profound reverence as the writing progressed, as Gaia wrote me.
You mentioned the word purpose. Purpose exists in everything, whether we recognize it or not, doesn't it?
Yes, I believe it does. And when I was, you know, when I was writing the book, I think readers will really see the interrelational purpose that prepared, you know, at every moment, at every step of the way, the universe is preparing for even greater levels of complexity. And so that is more of an evolutionary impulse that flows through the entirety of the story of Gaia.
What are some of the key messages that you share in the story of Gaia?
I think the most fundamental one is the point I made earlier, that mind and consciousness aren't something we have. They literally are what we and the whole world are. And so our universe is more a great thought, as Sir James Jeans, the eminent Edwardian scientist, once said, more a great thought than a great thing. And our universe is a great thought of God, a great thought of great mystery of Allah. Of as Einstein would say, cosmic mind, the infinite and eternal cosmic mind, these great thoughts that arise from the ground of being that so many mystics have spoken of, the universes as great thoughts. So that's one point. The another point is that our universe does exist, meaningfully exist, and purposefully evolve as a conscious and so living and sentient and vitally unified entity. So we're its microcosmic co-creators. Whether, as you said, Victor, we know it or not, we are. And because of that, what we think, what we speak, what we do ripples throughout space and time, because we are part of that wholeness. So yet, we have, in many cases, collectively, brought into the appearance of separation rather than the fundamental reality of wholeness. And now we're waking up in many ways to remember that we are inseparable. And that is vital, because where we are, where we've been and where we are, it seems to me, with that illusion of separation, we've behaved in the ways we have, is completely unsustainable. So for us not to just survive, but to thrive and to evolve as part of an evolving planet, it's time for us to wake up, as Ken Wilber says, to and therefore to grow up, to clean up because of the traumas that we've embodied because of that illusion of separation. And then we can show up and link up and lift up together and move forward together. Because what I'm sharing, the science that is the cosmic hologram and the science that is the story of Gaia, is the science of love.
Absolutely. There's a wonderful word in parts of Africa, which has iterations throughout Africa, Ubuntu.
Yes.
It is translated as, I am because we are.
Yes. Yes. And that is that, you know, that wonderful indigenous profound wisdom. And of course, in the Eastern traditions, there's a word namaste that essentially says the same thing, that I see you because you are me.
Absolutely.
And what a wonderful moment with all the challenges, and my goodness me, we are existentially threatened. And yet I wholeheartedly believe that the conversation we're having now, the awakening that we're speaking of now, is the invitation of Gaia, the invitation of our living universe and living planetary home that says, wake up, wake up. We invite you into this whole new amazing adventure that is there, that potential is deep within you. Because this is the universe flowing through us. This is Gaia flowing through us at this existential moment of choice. So what is it that we do choose in this moment?
How may we reflect this in our everyday lives?
To live love. It sounds, you know, we're very good at making things very complicated. Very good at making things complicated. And I'm not suggesting this is necessarily easy, but you will know, and many of our listeners will know, the golden rule. And the golden rule is pervasive through so many spiritual traditions. And the golden rule basically invites us to treat others and to add our planetary home, Gaia, to how we treat others as we would wish to be treated. And I think the golden rule has its foundation in the same understanding that Ubuntu does, that the wholeness of being means that when we treat others as we would wish to be treated, we indeed are treating ourselves as we would wish to be treated, because there is no other. And
absolutely.
So that we can live in our everyday lives. In fact, we don't only can, you know, this is the invitation to do that, to ask in every moment, you know, what would love do, to make our choices based on love.
It's fascinating. I actually did a sermon about the multiple iterations throughout many faiths of the golden rule and cultures.
Yes. And it's there, isn't it? It's in so many. And even if it's not articulated in that way, you know, this is also all the indigenous wisdom. Because when we realize that we are part of the web of life, when we hurt others of the web of life, we hurt ourselves inevitably.
And it's as simple as acts of kindness, just gentle, simple acts of kindness and loving kindness.
Yes.
Which we can do every day. The opportunities are there for us every day to extend that to others.
Exactly. You know, we're not talking about big things. You know, when people say, what can I do? You know, I'm so small and it's just me. And I say, well, you're not small and it's not just you. But we don't know, do we? When we offer an act of kindness, we have no idea where that will ripple. And what we do know, and I certainly know as a part of my work as a systems, a holistic systems investigator, is the non-linearity of complex systems. Tiny, tiny moments, tiny little sort of nudges can have huge ramifications. And vice versa, you know, big grand gestures can just ripple to very little. So, you know, every act of kindness matters. Every word of kindness matters.
Absolutely. You had mentioned the organization Whole World-View at the end of the last segment. You're co-founder of that organization. What is the Whole World View? And why do you again hyphenate World in View?
Because I'm obsessed with hyphens, I think. But it was like when the Cosmic Hologram was published, the co-founder, my friend and co-founder of Whole World View, Gil, sort of said, well, you know, maybe we should do something a bit more than just, you know, go with the publication of this book. What do you reckon? And I said, that's a great idea. And of course, what I was been talking about is moving from a fragmented worldview to literally a whole worldview. And that our fragmented worldviews, our worldviews drive our behaviors pretty much. You know, how we see ourselves, what our worldviews are also what our mindsets are, how we see each other and ourselves and our place in the world. And we've actually collectively had a fragmented worldview where we've bought into the appearance of separation rather than the fundamental nature of wholeness. And so what I was writing about in the Cosmic Hologram and now in the story of Gaia was literally about a whole world. And therefore the title, as it were, of the organism, just seemed very natural that it was Whole World Dash View.
Wonderful. You share that our universe exists to evolve. What do you feel is the most compelling evidence of this?
Well, first of all, right from that very first moment that I describe as the first moment of a big breath rather than a big bang, our universe was in its most minute size and also its most ordered state. And ever since since then has space has expanded and time has flowed forward, our universe has been undergoing an evolutionary arc from simplicity, its innate initial simplicity, to ever greater levels of complexity as this big breath has continued to flow and unfold. But when I went back to that first moment, the realization was that not only was the universe as simple as it could be, but no simpler, but also its relational setup, which, you know, we call the laws of physics, were incredibly exquisitely fine-tuned. So the constants of energy, matter, and space and time were so intricately fine-tuned and relational, innately relational, that they set up our universe not just to exist, but able to evolve to greater complexity. And when I then began to sort of write that whole story, I realized that the universe was actually setting in train its future evolutionary arc to greater complexity, sometimes millions, sometimes tens of millions, sometimes hundreds of millions before it will be able to manifest that complexity. So one example is right at the very beginning. Our universe, the first energy matter, wasn't just hydrogen, the simplest of the 94 natural elements, but there was a reasonable amount of helium, which is the second most complex. And, you know, I always ask the question, why? My mum always used to say my favorite word was why. So why wasn't the universe just hydrogen at that very first moment? So why was there also helium? And it took another 200 million years before that understanding of why that was the case came into play. And the reason is that helium is very inert. It doesn't react easily with other energy matter. So from that first moment, whilst the universe was expanding and magnetic and electric fields were starting to shepherd the first matter that would eventually become stars, but not for several hundred million years, the helium just sort of hung around, not doing much. But the point is, when stars then began to form, the first stars, and began to shine and then use that fuel, that primordial fuel, primarily of hydrogen, to then undertake reactions alchemically to again sort of synthesize more and more elemental complexity, something vital happens. Because the once you get to helium, to move beyond helium is actually quite tricky. It's a very challenging reaction, and it only is successful out of 1 out of 2,500 times. If there was just the helium that had been synthesized within stars, there wouldn't have been enough helium to get over that bump, to get over that threshold to greater complexity. But because in the mix, there was sufficient helium from the very beginning of our universe available, it sort of helped to kickstart that next reaction. And had it not been there, you know, our universe probably would have spluttered out there and then. But because there was that helium from right from the get-go, stars were able to then continue that process to complexity, to then carbon and oxygen and nitrogen and all the other more complex elements. You and I are primarily made up of hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and a couple of other elements. If that primordial helium wasn't there in stars and there from the very beginning of the universe, you and I would not be having this conversation.
So that primordial helium helped to inflate the cosmic balloon.
Yes. It basically enabled that journey, that evolutionary journey to complexity to happen. Because if it hadn't been there from the very get-go, when the first star started to light up several hundred millions of years later, they would have just spluttered out. Because that hump of that particular reaction from helium to more complex elements would not have happened sufficiently often to continue that process.
My guest, Dr. Jude Caravan, her book, The Story of Gaia, The Big Breath, and the Evolutionary Journey of Our Conscious Planet. We'll be back with more after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Back back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this week, Dr. Jude Kerovin, her book, The Story of Gaia, The Big Breath and the Evolutionary Journey of Our Conscious Planet. Jude, I have to ask, in your opinion, who inhaled and exhaled the big breath?
Well, first of all, what we now cosmologically feel, we have the best evidence for, is that our universe will be a continuing out-breath through a cycle, a life cycle. And it's quite sciencey why that would be the case, but it very much is looking like it will be a finite life cycle, possibly completing in maybe even tens of billions of years, at a point where space has expanded and time has flowed, but to a point where the temperature of space is close to absolute zero. So it's a finite life cycle. Who, therefore, is the out-breath, the out-breather? The ancient Indian sages said it was God, Brahman, who breathed our universe into being. And they saw cycles of out-breath and in-breath. But for our universe, it seems that the process is an out-breath. And who, what? Cosmic mind, I would say, the infinite and eternal mind of the cosmos, breathing our universe as a great thought, perhaps to know itself at ever greater levels of experiential individuation and complexity.
You share that our world, Gaia, is a conscious planet. Please explain.
Well, it's difficult to differentiate a planetary being from a universe that is itself living and conscious and evolving. So within the wholeness that is our universe, if you like, you know, planets and planetary systems are cells within the body of the universe. You know, just as we're made up, each and every one of us is made up of 37 trillion cells, many of which are not human, many of which are sort of bacterial cells and viruses, in fact, as well as fungi. We can consider each of our cells part of each of us as cells in the planetary sentience, the planetary consciousness that is Gaia. And take that beyond so that our planetary home and our entire solar family are cells within our galaxy. Our galaxy is cell, our galaxies are cells within the entire universe. So realizing that our entire universe is a cosmic hologram, a hologram is characterized by the whole being reflected in each part, in each pixel, and then holarchically nested as we move from the most innate simplicity at its most fundamental levels through this sort of, you know, this nested holographic manifestation up to the wholeness, which is why our universe can exist and evolve as a unified entity. Because although within space-time, the speed of light is the cosmic cop in terms of the signaling between us. And that enables, you know, causality to have flowed and the arrow of time to have flowed from that very first moment of the big breath 13.8 billion years ago. But because our universe exists and evolves in its wholeness as a unified entity, it knows itself as a wholeness, which is why we can have the sort of experiences that both you and I had as a child and have had throughout, I'm presuming here, but I suspect you still have them as I do, of non-local awareness, of listening to our intuition, which is our superpower, and then synchronicities giving us the guidance and the way showers of our paths forward. And the old paradigm of materialism and separation just doesn't have any perspective on those sort of experiences, whereas this understanding of the cosmic hologram and the story of Gaia, our experiences are natural, being able to engage and communicate with discarnate intelligences is natural. And that's for me part of the incredible wonder and excitement and invitation to this empowering new adventure that's natural for all of us.
You refer to this as naturalizing multidimensional communication.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
Well, first of all, you know, for each of us, I know that things, you know, phenomena, which I refer to as supernormal phenomena, such as, you know, remote viewing, telepathy, you know, that is something that we may practice. But I would suspect that for every one of our listeners have had an intuition at some point or other. I've had an intuitive insight at some point, probably many, many times in their lives. And so the question is, do we listen to that? Or do we say, no, it's an overactive imagination, or, you know, that's nonsense, or doesn't make sense, or whatever. So I would invite everyone to appreciate, to invite and to welcome intuition as our innate superpower into our lives. And then if your experience and my experience, I know many, many folks' experience is the case, synchronicities then show up. It's the universe almost meeting us halfway and extending that invitation to us. And when we listen to our intuition and notice and pay attention to synchronicities, they are the most wondrous way showers to, in such a benevolent, in such a, you know, we talked about kindness earlier, in such a wondrous, kind, loving way, and, you know, exciting way, interesting way, fascinating way, empowering way.
I had a wonderful spiritual teacher in the 1990s who used to share that everything is unfolding in divine order. He would say, you may not recognize it, you may not see it, you may not like or even detest what's happening, but when you step back and view it from the long range with spiritual eyes, you'll see that everything is unfolding in divine order.
Absolutely. And in its divine timing. Its divine order and its divine timing. And when we really hear that wisdom, when we really listen to that wisdom and know that and trust that, it actually, you know, for me certainly, it's made that way so much easier, so much simpler, so much more joyous, because I've not been fighting the universe. I've not been fighting, you know, the divine order. I've been attuning and aligning and trusting it. And that is just, so to hear that wisdom, and of course, many wisdom teachers tell us this, let's listen to that wisdom and let's live it. Let's be it. Let's embody it in our lives.
Is this our collective moment of choice?
I believe so. As a member of a group, a community called the Evolutionary Leaders Circle, I think something like 43 of us came together a couple of years ago to write a book from many different perspectives, but all with this understanding, this sense of, yes, this is our moment of choice. And as a moment of choice, it's an invitation to literally to wake up, to remember that we are inseparable from our universe, inseparable from each other, and inseparable from our planetary home.
How do you see the potential of the story of Gaia to empower transformational change in our world?
I would invite readers to allow the book to read them and to really go on that journey of Gaia together with Gaia and with our universe, and just be open to how they feel about that journey within themselves. And, you know, to appreciate that, you know, this story is a unitive narrative. So this is an underpinning and a framing for this evolutionary impulse that now invites us in this collective moment of choice to realize this perhaps for many radical new understanding. But what it does, and I came together with a number of my colleagues to draft a unitive narrative based on the science of love, the science of cosmic hologram and the story of Gaia and the evidence from thousands of researchers. And we end that narrative by quoting a great teacher called Théa de Chardin, who some of our listeners may have heard of, who wrote 100 years ago that someday, as humanity, when we discover the power of love, we will have discovered fire for the second time in our human story. And I would suggest that that someday is here and now. And as we wake up to this realization that unity is our fundamental reality, and wake up therefore to the radical understanding of a unitive narrative, then not only can we remember who we truly are, perhaps for the first time, but we can also understand what we might consciously evolve to become.
The wisdom of Dr. Jude Curvin, her new book, The Story of Gaia, The Big Breath and the Evolutionary Journey of Our Conscious Planet. Jude, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about you and this amazing work.
Thank you, Victor. Well, folks can get the book from all good booksellers, from my publisher, my wonderful publisher, Inner Traditions, or through Amazon. It's available already in the US and Canada from November the 1st. It will be in the UK and Europe from December the 8th, but you can still pre-order it in the UK and Europe now. And you can find probably most about my work and my wonderful community at wholeworld-view.org.
Jude, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing this wisdom. And I can't wait for the next book.
Thank you, Victor.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.